Hey everyone, and welcome back to Beat the Sheet, an Xbox Game Pass challenge. The only podcast aiming to complete every single one of the near 300 titles that have been made available on Game Pass since the start of 2020. As always, I'm your host Andy Wood, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
Hi everybody.
So, on this week's show, we've got an all-time classic joining Xbox Game Pass, Kingdom Come Deliverance goes medieval on our ass, and the infinite wait for Halo Infinite continues. So, how has your week been so far, Josh?
Well, I've got a terrifying confession of this. As we speak at this very moment, the titles that were due to leave Xbox Game Pass have left, but the titles which are replacing them have not been announced. So I am in this purgatory where I can't really enjoy anything in life because I'm just waiting for some horrible event. I'm just waiting for the Bard's Tale to get lobbed into leaving soon. Yeah. Or I can't play anything else because all I can think of is, well, I'm going to have to stop playing it in a few hours to play whatever trash gets added this week. It's just kind of wrecking my life, you know?
Yeah, I get that. That's always the way. It's kind of like, I don't know, if we knew there was a longer wait until the next Leaving Soon games, you know, by all means, you pick something new up. You know, we've got God, what, about 150 games each to complete in this challenge. So,
oh yeah,
there's plenty of games on offer, but it's when you're just waiting. You know they're going to announce them. You know it's going to be something horrible. And yeah, you're just stuck. And here we are. So yeah, just I'm the same as you, really. Just sat around, just putting the odd hour into a few different games and just waiting for the next big heap of garbage to assault us, basically.
It's not nice, is it? Of course, at the top of that show, we always mention that there are nearly 300 titles we are looking to complete. Well, big news, 299 games are now available on, or have been made available, at least to us, on Xbox Game Pass for our completion challenge. So the big 300 is coming up. Do you have like a dream title you want to see just appear? Or is it something you've already beat?
Yeah, something I've already beat. Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. Literally anything I've already beat would be nice. But I mean, yeah, it's a big milestone. We'll have to change the wording of our intro to say over 300 games, which I'll probably get wrong about 50 times when we try and record. but yeah, you know, it's a big moment. It's a scary moment in a lot of ways. I think to celebrate next week, we'll maybe run down some actual numbers of, you know, just give people the actual numbers of just how many games we still need to finish on this crazy challenge.
It's pretty frightening.
How we can't do it. But I think, I don't know about you, probably dropping us into something we don't want to achieve here, but I think that whatever game 300 is, I think it should be at the top of our list to finish it.
Oh, I mean, it could just be end up being Battletoads, which does come out next week.
That is true.
And we will end up playing that because of it being a new edition, but yeah, Battletoads, that's just depressing, isn't it? Crappy Battletoads. I mean, I'm just dismissing it as trash before I've even played it. But
Well, by the new rule of 300, you will have to play it.
I'll have to play it.
So there you go.
Prove me wrong, Toads.
All right, then. Well, I guess we should move on to the show.
Oh, do we have to? Well, there has been just the solitary new addition to Xbox Game Pass this week. But it's a bit of an all-time classic. It's Final Fantasy VII, the old 1997 PS1 classic JRPG.
Yep, 97.
Oh, man. How many fond memories do you have of Final Fantasy VII?
God, I sure have a lot of fond memories of Final Fantasy VII, Josh. Those times that I played it, they were good times. I enjoyed those greatly. How about you? Did you enjoy playing this game?
Okay, it's time to come clean, isn't it? Neither of us have actually played and beaten Final Fantasy VII. This is insane. I know legitimately mad. But
it's pretty ridiculous. I was, you see, I had a PS1, but I'd kind of went into N64 stuff by then, so I wasn't going to be doing a giant RPG on a PS1 when I was, 7 years old as well, which probably didn't help. But I've played a few hours of it. I got it on my PSP, I think, at some point, and I played some of it, and it was all right. So yeah, that's all I've got.
It's one of those weird gaps, isn't it, in like a gaming backlog history. I had a PS1 as well. I played most of the PS1 classics, but I didn't really get into JRPGs until about 5 years ago, randomly. But I wasn't a massive fan of the genre. I'd only ever really completed Final Fantasy X, and I didn't even finish that. You know, I just put about 40 hours into it, so near as downed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an odd one. I'm kind of looking forward to playing. I ain't going to play it on Xbox. I'm going to get it on a portable system, I think. And plug away at it slowly rather than have to sit on the couch and play it. But
I think that's a good call.
It seems the best way to do it these days. But of course, fond memories for people who have played it still gets routinely regarded as one of the best games of all time.
Well, yeah,
even to this day, it's that kind of that shine hasn't really diminished off it by all accounts. I mean, I can make a slight claim that I have finished Final Fantasy VII because I did play and beat the remake for this year. I may be one of the absolute freaks who bought the remake without actually having played Final Fantasy VII.
So that was all weird move from you, it has to be said. But I mean, so as far as I'm aware, because I've not played VII Remake yet, I'm going to get to it, but you know, I should probably also play VII first. But I think from what I've heard, the actual entire story of Final Fantasy VII Remake is basically just a grand reimagining of about the first 4 hours of real Final Fantasy VII. So the best I can offer you here is that if you can find an in-progress save file that has done the first 4 hours of Final Fantasy VII, I will permit you to continue from that point. Well, that's all I'm giving you. There's no way this is getting put down as a completion on that sheet, I'm afraid.
It's just the Midgar section, isn't it? Oh, man. Final Fantasy VII Remake's good, though. That's a good time. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's worth pointing out here as well. I mean, Game Pass is... One of the things Game Pass has been quite great for is getting some of these, like, all-time classic games out in front of a new audience, you know? Like, a lot of people will be seeing FF7 here and they will have heard about it for years. And, you know, I mean, the game's, like, what, 23 years old now? Like, so it's...
Yeah,
there's a whole generation of people who wouldn't have even been born when this came out. So it's great that this can be put in front of them, you know? And the same applies to, like, some of the cool games in Rare Replay. We got a chance to play Shenmue 1 and 2 through Game Pass, which have sadly left now, but, you know, they were games that were in our blind spot, and, you know, they were games we were always kind of curious about, and, you know, Game Pass allowed us to finally have an excuse to play them. So, you know, it's really good in that respect, I think, that this is coming to Game Pass.
Yeah, it's great to see old classic titles coming onto the service. Wouldn't you, though? Can you imagine a world where all the old publishers and all the old devs got together and they put together a massive library of basically anything that came out before 2005. Just all the retro games.
Just everything.
You could literally charge me whatever you wanted, and I would probably pay it. So just have instant Game Pass-like access to just a giant library of retro titles.
That does sound magical. It's almost like the, you know, you've got like the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo classic consoles. This is just like the everything classic. It's just got everything on it and you just play it. Yeah.
Oh my God. How much would you pay? I'd pay £40 a month for that.
Oh God, easily, yeah.
I think it's worth that, yeah.
Oh God, yeah, it'd be amazing. I mean, I'm dying for, like, you know, because... all of these kind of classic consoles and that sort of stuff, and like virtual console gaming and things, like, it feels like they've stopped at that kind of mid-90s region. Like, I do want that to just push through another 10 years of games. I just, you know, I want the best things from the N64 on a mini console or even just on Switch Online to play. And the same goes for, it's, you know, some of those really iconic early kind of GameCube, PS2, Xbox era titles.
Just give me some Sega Saturn and some Sega Dreamcast games. I missed all of Saturn. I missed most of Dreamcast. Oh my God, I'd pay a fortune to Sega to just have access to their library. Sega, if you're listening, make me give you my money. I want to do it. I want to do it so bad. I haven't played Space Channel 5. I need to play Space Channel 5.
I really do need to play Space Channel 5. I always wanted to play
this. Stupid show in a heartbeat to start, beat the Sega just the next week, and I'd just play all the Sega games. I'd never touch this crappy console again. I'd just be playing Saturn and Dreamcast games and Mega Drive games. Oh my God. I'd never leave the house. It would be great.
Well, this has been some fantastic marketing for this show and for Game Pass. So I'm glad we've done that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of new additions at the moment, as you said, that's really all we've got right now. You know, just the one game this week, but it's a big one. So yeah, it's an exciting week, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, you download it, listen to that soundtrack. That soundtrack, man. Good God.
Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to the music and I haven't played the game, but I've listened to the music and oh man, that one-winged angel theme. Jesus.
Yeah, that's some good stuff.
With a Latin, the shouting of Sephiroth. I sometimes listen to that just to hype myself up in the morning. Just like walking out. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am Sephiroth. Oh, God. And he's so handsome. Isn't he handsome? Don't you think it's
I guess so. I guess so. I've not seen a lot of Sephiroth since I've not played the new or old version of this game. But you know, yeah, he's a guy. He's got one wing, maybe. I don't know.
Right, he does. Yeah, it's great.
That must be inconvenient. How's he even getting around with that? Does he just fly in a constant circle? Just try.
He's a big boy. Don't worry about that. He can handle it.
I'm sure he can.
Cloud. He's hot. Like Cloud.
You're starting to sound as thirsty as I've heard FF7 Remake is now.
Oh my God, it gets so thirsty. There's this outlandish dance scene in this club, and it's hot as hell. And there's also this scene where he gets a hand massage, and I kid you not, it's hot. It shouldn't be. They're kind of playing it for laughs, but I'm just sad. I'm like, oh my God, this is hot. It's great. You got Aerith. Aerith's great. Aerith's the gosh darn best. Oh man, I love Aerith. Team Clarith. That's what I am over here.
Yeah, well.
People say Cloud and Tifa. That's odd, man. It's Cloud and Aerith forever. Oh my God, put it in a tree. Put it in, show the only sexy guys. Barret's hot. It's great.
You know, some would say, you know, when the only new addition to Game Pass is a game that neither of the hosts have played, that you might not be able to get much content out of it. But here we are, guys. We can scrape content out of literally anything. So,
do you know all these characters look like? Do you want to rank them by hotness? I could totally do that right now. Yeah, get a picture of the FF7 remake cast up, and let's just rank them. Let's do it.
Maybe another time, Josh. Maybe
Beth
another
the
time.
Hottest. He's number one.
We'll make like a beat the sheet thirsty edition episode. It can launch on a different day, exclusively at night. Man.
Sephiroth's my daddy bad angel. I love him. He's the best. Sod in Latin. Oh, God, speak Latin to me, Sephiroth, daddy. Yes.
Well, moving on from all of that, I guess, we'll try and escape from this and move on to the games that have... now left Game Pass, so not necessarily leaving because they have already gone. But you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've had to play a few games. They were Devil May Cry 5.
Who's the hottest
Express.
DMC 5 protagonist? That's what I want to know. You got Dante, Nero, me.
It's got to be Nero, I think.
I'm going V. V's hot.
V looks like he'd fall over if you tapped him on the arm.
Yeah, but you want that, don't you? Yeah, that's great. He's got a bird.
Do you want nurse him back to health? Have you got some kind of nightingale kind of thing going on here? Just nurse him up.
I'd nightingale the hell out of that guy. The heck? Oh. Anyway, what else is going? Yuku is having things. There's nothing hot in Yuku. It's just a beetle. Don't worry about that. If you're looking to get your rocks off.
I'm not looking at King Shane, but you know, it's, you know, there's something there for someone. Last couple of weeks we've played through Devil May Cry 5 and Yoku's Island Express. Obviously they've left Game Pass now, but if you'd like to hear our thoughts on those, just check out last week's show. And then this week we are finally covering Kingdom Come Deliverance, which is a gargantuan title that's took us about 50 hours each to get through in the last couple of weeks. So, here we are. We're finally done with it. We can finally move on to other games soon. But, what were your thoughts about Kingdom Come, Josh?
Oh, man, I was so scared of playing this game. This game was the opposite of things I like. And you know what? I kind of like Kingdom Come Deliverance, and I don't know why.
I don't know why.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it? So Kingdom Come Deliverance is essentially a fairly hyper-realistic medieval life simulator. You're kind of a farmhand who terrible tragedy befalls him, and he gets swept up in this big conflict between rulers in 16th century Bohemia. And yeah, you know what? It's kind of good, but it's also terrible. It's utterly bizarre. We'll dig into each of the individual kind of elements of this eventually, but how did you find your Kingdom Come Deliverance?
Yeah, so this was on my top three of games I really didn't want to leave Game Pass because I just was desperate to not play it. You know, it's like Bard's Tale 4 level, really. Definitely scared of it. But yeah, it's a weird one. I kind of agree with your sentiment, but maybe in the opposite way. Like, I think it's a terrible game, but there's some good in there somewhere. You know, it's rather than the opposite way around. Like, it's not as like minute to minute, it's not as bad to play as I was fearing. I thought from seeing previews of it, it looked like clumsy and horrible to control, and that the combat was dreadful. And those two things may be true to an extent, but it's not as bad as I was expecting. So that's at least something.
Yeah, but let's dig into the combat, because the combat's certainly where I had the least amount of patience for this game. It's all first person, so it's first person melee combat almost exclusively. And I hate first person melee combat. It's something that never feels particularly comfortable to me. And Kingdom Come is even worse, because it has literally the least physical melee combat I've ever played. You have no idea if you're hitting somebody or not. It's so soft. Nothing has any impact to it.
Yeah.
And it's all based on stance. So the idea is that you switch stance and you swing your sword from different angles. There's a poke button, there's a slash button. The slash button takes so long to do that you might as well just poke your way through the entire game. I just aimed for the eyes. That's all I did.
I got to a certain point in this where I found a sword in a shop that was like very good at stabbing but not good at slashing, and I just bought the stabby sword and just stabbed people in the eyes until they died. Like, that was all I did, because it was the only way.
It's just bizarre, isn't it? So, you know, the idea is get into these one-on-one battles and you're meant to block and then slash low or slash high, but it never... I don't know what these guys are doing, but by God, it's very hard to actually hit anybody.
Yeah,
like, even if you absolutely smash a perfect parry, like, you know, Dark Souls level perfect parry, it still doesn't matter.
Yeah, they'll still just block you.
It'll just block it anyway, and then they'll block your five or six follow-ups, and then your stamina bar's drained.
Yeah.
And then the screen goes blue, and I don't know if that's because I'm dying or because I'm gassed, apparently, for swinging my sword.
I don't know about you,
times.
Josh, but, you know, whenever I do cardio, when I'm really at my limits, everything just goes blue. That's just how it works. It's hyper-realistic medieval action.
It's just, and the minute there's more than two people basically in a fight with you, you've had it.
Yeah.
It's comical. It's almost like a sketch where someone's hitting you just like a plastic wooden sword.
They just beat the crap out of you, and there's nothing you can do.
You can't do it, because you can't block in all directions. You can only block who you're locked onto.
Exactly.
And the lock-on is abysmal. You can't switch between people. So there's just this dude just stabbing at you in the back. And you're like, oh my God. You can't run away. You're stuck.
And that's one of the big problems, isn't it? Because like they wanted to be as realistic as possible. And realistically, a man with a sword will only be able to fight one other man with a sword. You know, this isn't like Game of Thrones where someone's like taking down like seven or eight like random no-name minions on the way to something else. Like, it's, you know, it's quite realistic that I can't beat two or three people. But what it also is no fun in a game.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? It does lead to the fun in the opposite scenario, though, where all of a sudden there's seven of you guys and there's one of them and you're all just stabbing so the hell out of him. Like, it's brutal. Like, it's just, and the AI is hilarious because they all just pack around like a crowd of hyenas. And it's like eight people and all just stabbing. And I'm stabbing as well. I'm like, if I keep stabbing, my sword level will go up.
There's a few points in this game, because like the majority of the game is pretty isolated, right? It's kind of like you'll go on a journey and you'll fight one guy somewhere, maybe. Maybe at some point there'll be two people, so you'll just run away because you can't beat them and stuff like that. But like then every now and then there'll be these sieges where like they try and give you this kind of like, oh, it's a grand battle. The enemy has so many numbers, you know, they have more than us, so this is going to be a tough battle. But really, you just have an army of invincible NPC friends. So like you just stand with them, and as you said, just circle around one guy and just stab him in the ass until he dies. Like, you just do that. It's great.
It's strangely satisfied. It's the only time the combat, apart from first-person punching, I loved hitting people in the face in this game.
Yeah, I don't mind. For some reason, it's good.
I found that it was quite enjoyable. I could have blocked, but you didn't need to. You just pounded the hell out of people. Like, you just threw bombs, and people would go down, and then you could loot them for all their clothes. Just leave them in this pigsty, just naked, the crap kicked out of them. It was just quite good. I quite liked that. Quite anarchic.
That's fair. I do agree that the actual melee combat, it was only really in any way satisfying when you didn't have a weapon, which is so backwards. Like, it's so weird that like you put a sword in my hand and it becomes worse, but that's where we are.
The archery is abysmal. Like, it gives you no way that you kind of hold the bow at this weird angle, so you can't, it's not straight. So you're kind of hoping that you're firing it in the right direction, but invariably you don't. So you have to practically walk up to somebody's face and just shoot an arrow right in their head.
Yeah, and then they don't give you a crosshair either, so you've got no way of aiming this. Yeah. Thing. Like, there's a story mission where you have to hunt a rabbit. You're off on some little hunting expedition with this man who doesn't like you. And it took me about 15 arrows to hit this rabbit that was just stood still in front of me. Like, because I had no way of aiming it. Like, I don't know how they expect somebody to realistically use the archery in, like, a combat setting in this game. Like, it just seems insane.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare, but it's also the only way to beat certain boss fights who are just impossibly difficult. So you just pull out your bow and arrow in this tiny, tight, confined space and you just keep flinging stuff at him. And you live in hope that one of them hits him in the head and they just drop to their knees and go, no more. I'm like, all right, sure. You know,
no more low power, poor accuracy at close range. No, please.
Just totally bizarre, but away from the combat, which is uniformly pretty bad. It's very janky. It's so janky.
Yeah.
I mean, what made worse still was the fact you can't heal during a battle, which is just mind-boggling to me because it's all about realism. And it's saying, well, yeah, you won't be able to heal during a battle, but you can't just make giant health potions in 15th century. That doesn't exist either, guys.
Yeah, like, exactly,
you've got to give me... You're trying to say my magic heal potion, which I've just been stabbed 80 times, is going to heal me. But having a quick swig from it in this quiet moment is too far. Come on, lads. What's going on?
Yeah, I'll get stabbed and I'll be bleeding, which is just make my health go down. And it's like, well, you know, you can't run away and apply a bandage to make sure you don't bleed to death. So you're just going to have to just keep fighting the guy until you die. That's all you can do now. It's just, it's just
bizarre.
It chooses the weirdest times to be realistic because it wants to be, but... Again, as you said, there's weird health potions and there's all kinds of crazy nonsense like that. Like, at one point, I needed to convince a guard to let me in an enemy camp and I wasn't, like, charismatic and I didn't have enough speech ability to do it. So I just drank a bard potion and then I was better at speech, so he let me in. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's just, pick your battles. I don't mind you having, a tinge of realism in your game, but, you know, pick the parts that make the game better. Don't just... make us all have an awful time for the sake of realism and then do that sort of stupid stuff as well.
But there are times, at least I found, that the realism actually does immerse me somewhat in this weird little game. Like, I did quite like having to eat and having to go to sleep. I don't know why. It became very Shenmue to me. I'd have to wait a certain amount of time to be able to do anything. You know, everything about it just kind of added into this weird medieval experience. You'd go and haggle the price of the room for the night. And go, if you're dirty, people act when you first talk to them, they're just acting shocked horror, just how bad you stink. I kind of like that.
Were you dirty for the entire game? Because I was very much dirty for the entire game. Because I didn't see the point in, like, going to a bathhouse and cleaning. So every time I talked to someone, like, they'd open the conversation by just going, dear God, you look like you've been assaulted. And then they just talk to me in a normal way. It was, it was nice.
I kind of like that. It's incongruous, but I kind of like it. Yeah. There's a lot about this game which I find incongruous, but I kind of like. I like how half the characters speak in a broad Yorkshire accent of such put-on variety. It's almost funny. And a few of the characters are randomly American. I love that.
I have no idea why.
I love that.
There's some guy in charge of a castle near the start, and I was like, why? Why are you American? What's happened? It's so weird. Sound like a Texan cowboy.
Exactly. I was like, what's going on here?
How did you end up here?
Why is everybody else? I love the way, I hate the fact that there's this opening little cutscene which plays as it loads up every single time upon booting, and it takes like 90 seconds to play through. And so you hear this little cutscene every single time. But I love the way this guy says massive army. He always comes up and says, and he invaded Bohemia with a massive army. And I just love that. Nice. I feel like I'm at home. I think it's fun. I feel like I'm sharing a kebab with Sean Bean. It's weird.
I think I only listened to that cutscene once or twice. I mean, I had to see it about 15 times, 20 times, because, as you said, you have to watch it before the game loads. But I just couldn't bear it. I've heard enough. I don't care that King Wenceslas isn't a very good king, and now King Sigismund is here. Like, whatever. Like, let me just play the game.
From Hungary. Every single time is just great. I love it. It's these over-the-top Yorkshire accents. No one from Yorkshire speaks that Yorkshire. I just love it.
It is very true.
I love the fact he plays this guy called Henry, who's a total dweeb. He's kind of a loser.
Like, he's just a big doe-eyed idiot, isn't he? Like, he's just
But I kind of find him charming. He's funny in his own way. The cast of characters are quite good. They made a big deal about Brian Blessed being in it. I spent the entire game waiting for Brian Blessed's voice. And when it came up, like,
yeah, you did go to it then, yeah.
There's the dude.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Just there was like, because he's actually only, he's like only in it briefly, really. He's like an optional objective on one of the main missions near the end. So it was a bit of a shame that he wasn't in it more, but it was still fun to hear him in this game. He fit the theme very well, I thought.
Yeah, you know, he's exactly what you want from this. Yeah, the story itself is bobbins, but it's also bad.
See, I have
not bad at all.
I have huge issues with the story. I think it's just they did so many stupid things I hate. Like, I just think that, I mean, I'm wary of going too deep into it because, you know, you don't want to give away too much. But I just, yeah, I thought it led nowhere, which was the most frustrating part.
But don't you kind of love the fact it led nowhere?
Well, I think the issue is you're seeing this as Shenmue. I think that's...
I am.
You're seeing this as medieval Shenmue. And I don't think it has anywhere near the charm of Shenmue.
Oh, like, it doesn't have the charm, but I kind of like the way it has this big... It builds itself as this big thirst for revenge. And it isn't really.
No, it's not at all.
At times, it becomes a weird romance simulator. Then I'm a plague doctor. Then all of a sudden, my dad's situation got a bit weird.
It got a bit weird, and then it was like the most insanely ham-fisted approach to that storyline I've ever seen in a game. Like, it just, they changed so much about how the characters acted on a dime. It was ridiculous.
It's just incredible. And there's this big villain guy who just randomly turns up, and I think he's in a homosexual relationship. I love that. Yeah. This is great. I just, the whole thing is mind-bogglingly all over the place. But the actual core writing of it, some of the actual dialogue and the choices and the characters, isn't that bad. It's actually fine. It's just like, it's almost like it's been put together by seven different people who wanted to tell an individual story. And all seven of these people are perfectly competent writers, but they at no point spoke to each other.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that in this game. Yeah. Like, and at some point, like, one of them basically decided, let's just give up the main quest. Let's not even, you know, we'll do different stuff instead. And then no one else picked that up and finished it. And it's just, yeah, as you said, it's a smattering of interesting, well-written stuff that doesn't go together. That's perfect. That's exactly what this is.
If you're the kind of person like me who played Shenmue 1 and thought this big tale for revenge with this big nasty Hong Kong master was going to be the whole focus of the plot, and then he just disappeared and never turned up again, and you kind of loved that, you will kind of love Kingdom Come, because it does the exact same thing. Completely incongruously. It's just all over the place.
For no reason at all. It's great. You know, at least in Shenmue, there was more logic to it. Not much more, but there was more. But still, yeah, it's just nonsense. But I would say that, like, getting beyond the story stuff, I actually do think that the world is quite well designed in this game, which surprised me. Like, the cities and the towns are actually quite intricate. There's quite a lot of personality to them. Which impressed me a lot. I wasn't expecting that. I thought they were all just going to be, you know, carbon copies of each other with the same buildings and stuff. And they're not at all, which is quite
actually
cool.
I quite enjoyed just riding around on my horse around Bohemia. It was quite nice. I quite enjoyed doing it. The horse controls are terrible and tanky.
Oh, awful, yeah.
But like, yeah, I kind of enjoyed the fact I was endlessly wrestling my horse to turn a corner. I don't know. Kingdom Come played some weird trick on me where every single time it did something terrible, I managed to convince myself I quite liked it. And I don't know why. It's very Shenmue in that sense, in that I actively hate the game, and yet I kind of respect it for being so single-minded in its stupid vision. That it's, like I said, these towns are intricately designed. They're packed full of shop. They're packed full of NPC characters. The side quests are actually pretty good. The mission structure's not too repetitive. A lot of the time it does get down to go here, talk to person, but I don't know. It's not very fetch questy. It really gets too fetchy, which I like.
They have you doing a bit of detective work in this, don't they? Which is kind of it's at its best when you're a weird medieval detective. Like, that's kind of the best part of the game, I thought, easily.
Yeah, when it becomes CSI Bohemia, it does become kind of fun to play, and the RPG elements are handled quite well, where you do start off completely useless in absolutely everything. And you're constantly gaining points just by existing in the world. You know, walking around and sprinting around will make you eventually be able to run and sprint quicker. talk to more people. You don't even need to convince them in dialogue. As long as you're talking, you're earning points.
Yeah.
As long as you're swinging a sword and hitting something, you're earning sword points.
Yeah. Go for a drink at the pub and you get more points in the ability to drink. Like, it's
I kind of like that. It's so committed to its RPG elements in a way that a lot of these sort of games, like your Oblivions and Skyrim, they're not really. They don't go whole hog in the way that Kingdom Come did.
It's very
so
true.
Committed to its vision. And I kind of respect that. In a world of just identikit Ubisoft open worlds with tedious characters and boring missions, and it's all the sod insane, Kingdom Come is something very different. And I find it very hard to be too down on it for that, because I'd much rather play this ridiculous disaster of a game than play the new Assassin's Creed. I would rather play Kingdom Come Deliverance than Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Valhalla. I couldn't give a solitary crap about those games. I would play a sequel to Kingdom Come.
There is more personality here than those games. Like they're polished and you know, like minute to minute you will have a better time. But you are right. There's a personality to this that is quite charming. Even though I definitely don't have as positive an opinion as you. Like it was made with some kind of vision that they actually stuck to. It's not just a team of 10,000 people making like identical side missions about going to fetch something from a different part of this giant world. You know, it's not that, which is nice. So you know, yeah, definitely appreciate it for that.
I think you just have to. It's the game that even if you don't like it, I think it's one of those you just kind of have to respect. You know, there's a lot going on here. The music's pretty good. I actually quite like the jaunty medieval tunes. It's nice. The voice acting on the old is pretty good. There's some really fun characters. Yeah, it's just a bizarre little game. And it's one of those I'd recommend.
I would have to say that the big thing I had with this game is this game absolutely revels in screwing you over every turn. Like, it loves it. It loves screwing you over. Like, when I started playing it, I made a point of like just noting down the biggest times this game screwed me. And I'm going to go through a few of them now because I think they're great. So let's see what we got. Right, so first one is I did a main story mission where you had to go and see these people. And, you know, it was the game was like, yeah, we have to go to this room, talk to these people. So I did that. And then the story mission finished, and it finished with me stood outside of this building at nighttime, because that's just what the time was in the game now. And then I got arrested for being in a place place at night without a torch. They were like, you should walk. Like, they just ran at me immediately before I could do anything, punched me in the face. I surrendered. And then they were like, where's your torch? What are you doing? So I had to pay a fine. And I had like no money at the time. I just started the game and I was skint. So then there goes some money. So that was nice. And then a bit later on, there was another mission that told me to go to this certain spot in the map. So I went there. And then when I got there, it was like, oh no, you need to come here in the morning. It's 1 a.m. now. You need to be here at 6 a.m. So I was like, oh, for God's sake. So I was like, all right, I'll just wait. Because in this game, you can just stand still and do nothing and just wait. So I pressed the wait button. And then at 3 a.m., it pushed me out of the waiting screen because a guard was punching me in the face. So so I surrendered to the guard. And he was like, you can't be here overnight. What are you doing? So then there's another fine. I fined again for that, which was nice. And then what else I had? I had a great one where... this was like, I hadn't saved in about 40 minutes or something. And the saving system in this game is a mess. We eventually learned that it used to be worse at launch, but now they've kind of changed it so that if you quit the game, you at least make a save file, which didn't used to be the case. When the game came out, you had to actually use items to save, and if you didn't have any, you couldn't save. So I didn't realize I could quit the game to kind of cheat the system yet. So my last save was about 40 minutes earlier. And I'm off doing this side quest where I needed to like go and do some grave robbing for this man. He wanted a ring out of a grave. It was quite early on. And, you know, there was pretty much low risk to it. There was no fighting to be done. So I went all the way to this grave, went in it, and then I was returning back to this man. And on my way back, I walked down this small hill. So just like a little hill. It wasn't a big, massive cliff or anything. Fell down this little hill, and poor Henry grazed his leg on the hill. So he was bleeding now. And I didn't have any bandages to fix his bleeding leg. So his health was just whittling away bit by bit. And then I looked on the map and saw there was like a bathhouse coming up. So I was like, my only choice is to go there and see if I can get a bandage or I'm going to die. So I went there and this woman had a bandage that was like, I think it was like cost like 14 coins or something. and I had like 13 coins. So I haggled with it because there's haggling in this game, so that's great. And usually you get away with knocking it down just a touch, right? And they're pretty happy with it. So I was like, oh, I'll give you 13. And she was like, that's not enough money. And then she wanted like 13.5 for the bandage, which I couldn't pay because I didn't have 13.5. So I had to just leave that dialogue. And then I just bled out at her feet. I just bled out at this woman's feet because she wouldn't give me the bandage. And that was like, I lost about 50 minutes of gameplay from falling down a small hill and bleeding out slowly over my leg. It's like, that's this game. That's what this game does.
And if you don't love that, then I have no idea what you want from video games, because that to me is great. This game is so janky. It's so janky. Yeah. It's the jankiest bit. It's like Bethesda levels of jank.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I'm not. Those are just the times the actual in-game systems screwed me. Like, there's been other times where there's been hilarious bugs. Like, I had an entire camp of allies that were all floating in the air on the same spot, and I needed to talk to a certain one of them. So I was just bashing A until my cursor hit the right floating man that had made this kind of blob of men, which was nice. I had another point where there was a conversation that I was in, and I was trying to convince someone to do something. And my two options were something like, the top option was something like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. And my bottom option was just UI_undefined_2872. Yes. So I was like, well, I guess I'll pick the option that I know. You know, I don't know what that bottom one is. So yeah, it's buggy, it's messy. The loading times are dreadful. I forgot about the time that actually another time it screwed me was when I was fast traveling between places on a big mission. And sometimes when you're fast traveling, because this game can't just be fair to you and let you just fast travel to places, you can randomly get like ambushed by people and you have a percentage chance to get away from it. So I'd hammered my skill to avoid those things as high as possible in the game because they were super annoying. So again, hadn't saved about 40 minutes. And I got one of those and it was like, oh, you can run away from this ambush. There's a 88% chance you'll be okay. So obviously failed that. And then when you fail those, you're just done. Because it's the funny situation we talked about earlier where there's like four men around you and they're just stabbing the crap out of you. Like, you have no hope. It's like you try and run away and they just clock you on the back of the head and you fall down. It's like a comedy skit, but also it's not funny because you lose hours of your game. But yeah, it's...
How much do you also love that the fast travel isn't even that fast?
It's not even that fast. It's like,
it takes forever.
It takes maybe about, I'd say, if I'm being generous, it takes half the time it would take me to manually ride there. So it's not even really fast. It's, you know, it's, yeah.
It's slightly faster travel.
Screen. Yeah, it's, yeah, slightly faster travel with the chance of getting randomly assaulted by armies of men. It's not even worth doing.
But, you've got to love it. You just got to love it.
You kind of do. You kind of do.
Until you hate it. And then you just hate it. It's what a fascinating game this is. I mean, I gave this a 6. But it could be anything to anybody. This could be a 3 to some people and a 9 for others. It could be anything.
Yeah, I kind of
absolutely
agree with that.
Mad.
Yeah, I think if you get into this, I mean, I ended up on the Reddit for this at some point. And there's people on there who are like really deep into this combat system, and they can take on fights of 3 or 4 people. I don't know how, but it seems like if you commit to it to a, you know, obsessive level, then even the combat system can actually become something a bit more. But yeah, you know, it's got a ton to offer. It's also got a ton of frustration in it. I came out at a 5 for this. I just found it too tedious. The second I finished the game and my achievement didn't unlock, of course, because it bugged out, I pressed on install because I was like, you know what, never mind. That sums up my time with Kingdom Come Deliverance. Just one last twist of the knife when I finished it. I was like, oh, here comes these 75 gamerscore finishing the game. It's like, nah, mate, nah, not for you. Not for you. He's another punch in the face from a guard.
God bless it. God bless it.
All right, then. So moving on, it's time for a bit of what are we playing, which is a infrequent segment where we talk about games that we're playing that aren't leaving soon, which is usually our entire lives. So yeah, over the last week, I found a bit of time to look at a couple of the old talkie-walkie, choicey-makey games made by Night School Studio. So these are Oxenfree and After Party. So I understand you've played through these ones as well, Josh.
Yes, I've beat both of these. I played Oxenfree a little while ago on my Nintendo Switch, and I was hooked by it solely for a wonderful mechanic it has in the way that it does its dialogue. Oxenfree has this fantastic system where you're constantly given choices over what you're going to say, but it has to happen quickly enough. You don't have a lot of time. There's no like meter ticking down, really. There's a small one, but you've got to be quick. You've got to be agile. You've got to quickly make a decision and quickly stick to it. And it actually makes dialogue with characters feel a little bit more natural and a little bit more as it should be, rather than these games can end up just you pausing over a menu, thinking over what's the next best thing to say. It keeps the story moving quicker. It keeps the dialogue coming faster. And it kind of makes you role play the character in a much more authentic way than these games usually manage. And I was really impressed by that in Oxenfree. I thought it was a really good way of adding a gameplay mechanic to something that is essentially just talkie-walkie times. You know, there's not much going on here other than talking and walking.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's the great thing about Oxenfree I found was that, you know, because a lot of the trappings of the game are quite, you know, we've seen them all before. You know, it's the story is a group of people that go to an island and then some spooky happenings happen. You know, it's quite a clever story. It's quite well told, but, you know, you've seen it before. But yeah, the thing that really separates this from those other games in that genre, as you said, is it's constantly keeping you busy with this dialogue, and it feels important. It feels interesting. Like, you know, the way you respond to all these characters changes their relationships and changes their opinion of you. And, you know, that'll lead to the story unfolding differently late on. And there's some quite drastic differences that can happen in this game. And yeah, I just really like that. I never felt like I was just listening to dialogue for the sake of listening to dialogue. You know, I was always a very active participant in it, which made the kind of 4 hours this game takes like kind of fly by, really.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's that naturalistic way of doing this. It's not easy to do. As you said, every bit of dialogue felt important. It feels important because it's well written and it does have consequences, but it doesn't have consequences in the obvious way where, you know, the option's so blindingly obvious that any moron could see what was happening.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot
of
the time, relationships just go south because maybe you didn't back somebody up when they needed you to, or they'll remember something that you said and then you're a hypocrite for it 2 hours later. You know, and it's clever in the way that it does that. It feeds it in a much better way than I've seen many of these games do that. And it's all in this spooky sci-fi kind of setting. There's strange goings-on, and it's a classic teen kind of drama. There's a lot to like in this game. The characters are really well written. Everybody's pretty likable, you know, and even if they're not likable, they're not likable for logical reason. And it's kind of ties into a well-crafted, very tight narrative, which plays its 4 hours. And as you say, it kind of flies by. You don't really notice you're playing. I played this in a sitting.
Yeah, yeah, same. I did as well. And I think it's scoped perfectly for what it is. You know, like there's the right amount of different areas on the map to travel to. There's the right amount of kind of missions and objectives to do before the story ends. Like it all just felt exactly as I wanted it to be. Yeah, I was just really happy with that. And yeah, like when it ended, I could see this being a game that you could easily have another run at as well. You know, like give it a few months to sort of maybe forget some of the story beats a little bit, or at least the conversations. But yeah, I could definitely see me having another go of this one. And it also does quite a clever thing with its New Game Plus that I won't go too into, but like it, because it's pretty plot dependent. But there's elements of a New Game Plus that kind of link back to you already playing the game, which is quite nice.
Yeah, it's all very clever. And that's what meant that this studio, Night School Studios, as you mentioned, when they announced their follow-up After Party, which was a day one launch on Game Pass many months ago now, I downloaded this straight away. It was right at the top of my queue. I was really excited to play After Party. After Party actually adds a lot more gamey elements to the formula. So the idea is you play these two teenagers who have died, find their way in hell, and they don't believe they should be there and they want to get out. What a great idea for a story to begin with. Fantastic idea. And it also bases it around this mechanic, which is different drinks and different booze affects the way that you talk to people, because ultimately the overriding goal is to defeat Satan in a drink-off. I mean, that's so good. There's so much there, which is great. And yet, it didn't quite work for me. And I don't know if you felt the same. Something just didn't click with After Party.
Yeah, I could not agree more on After Party. You know, so as I said, I really liked Oxenfree. I came out of that one, like, it's a 7 out of 10 game for me. It's really good. I could see people liking it even more than that with Oxenfree. So I came into After Party quite excited. I mean, I played both of these this week. I think if I'd played After Party first, I might not have been quite as inspired to go back to Oxenfree. But because I did Oxenfree first, I was hyped. I was ready to play another game by the studio. And I agree with you completely on terms of the setting. I love the you know, the setup for the story is great. I love the kind of vision of hell that this game has. Like, you know, if you do a drinking competition with Satan, because basically hell is just a place where, like, the demons do their 9-to-5 job of torturing humans, and then the humans and demons alike just spend the rest of the time just getting drunk. They all just go to different pubs and bars in hell, and they all just drink together, and like they get on fine because they know it's just, you know, those guys have to torture us. It's just a job. And like, it's just, it's a great setting. It's really clever. It's really fun. After Party's got a great voice cast. There's some really good voice actors in this as well. There's like Ashley Birch is in it, who she's Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. She does stuff in Life is Strange, Outer Worlds. You've got, yeah, like there's a lot of Telltale alumni in here from the Walking Dead games and stuff. You know, the voice cast is great. The dialogue's well written as well. And yet I just found that the side of this that was a game just completely fell flat for me. I think it loses a lot by, because you actually play as both of the lead characters in this game, just on and off at random times they'll switch, but they're always walking together. You're always doing the same stuff. And the great thing of Oxenfree was, as we were saying, you know, you have these conversations and they change relationships. Whereas in this game, there isn't any of that. Like you're both the characters really. So there's not any advancement there. There's no computer character to bounce off what you're saying, because you're kind of just everyone.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because as you mentioned, the dialogue is pretty good. The characters are well written. It's funny. There's a lot going on here, which I quite like. As you say, they kind of dispense this constant dialogue form in the narrative for these set piece kind of moments where this asshole who's bothering you in hell just keeps popping up to grill you and give you a test and force you to make quick witted decisions. And those sections are funny, but it's so much more gamey. It's what these games have always done, where they have these set piece moments where they're going to force you to make decisions, and that's going to have a grounding on the game in the future. And that's fine, but Oxenfree moved away from that, and it moved away from that so cleverly.
Yeah.
That I didn't really like the regression into it on this. It regressed its storytelling, and that's a real shame, because as we mentioned, the setting, the characters, the music in this is fantastic.
It is.
You know, the monster designs are wonderful. All the names of the cocktails which you can drink are fantastic. Yep. It's everything is here for this to be a better game. And yet when it comes down to it, the drinking mechanic, they don't lean into it enough. This to me would have been a fantastic puzzle kind of game.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with that. I mean, I think that's one of the things with this game that was so frustrating, because, yeah, so as we said earlier, you know, you have these different drinks and they kind of give you a bit of liquid courage to do different stuff, you know? So it's like some drinks might make you more aggressive. Some drinks will make you flirty. They do some really stupid stuff later on where, like, you can have, like, a drink that makes you more like a pirate. And, like, it's just stupid and it's funny. And, like, it really is quite enjoyable, except for the fact that the problem with this game is that, you know, as you said, that system works so well as a puzzle thing. You know, oh, what type of person do I need to be to get through this situation? The problem with After Party is it doesn't matter what you say to anyone. Like, everything you say works. So there's no losing here. There's no way to do it wrong. And that completely defeats the whole purpose of that system. Like, you don't need to have those drinks at any point in the game. You can just do normal dialogue options anywhere and they'll all work and you'll just win. So it makes its whole own system pointless. It's like they didn't, like, believe in it enough. It's strange.
You get to this weird half point, don't you, where you've lost the endless dialogue influencing narrative of Oxenfree because you sacrificed that to certain sections. But you didn't also commit to this puzzle element of the drinking because you didn't want to harm the narrative too much.
Yeah.
And you've kind of ended up in this place where you're kind of at the worst of both worlds. After Party at no point is a bad game. It's very playable. It's the story still carries me through. The setting and everything about it is there to make me want to play it. But it feels like a massive missed opportunity more than anything else, because all the elements are here for this to be better than Oxenfree. And yet it isn't, and I don't think it is in any way. And I think that's quite sad, to be honest.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I'm disappointed that this studio making a game with this setting that I've already said I love, like the whole concept of the world and the way it starts, I love it. I'm just disappointed that this is the game we got from that, because now it's kind of done, right? Like, they're not going to make, there won't be another game set in this particular version of Hell with this kind of, this setup, because they've done it. And I mean, it was fairly well received and I imagine it did quite well, but you know, it's not the kind of thing you make a sequel out of. So I feel like they've wasted that setting on this game. I don't think there's a great game under the hood here. Really, you spend a lot of time just backtracking back and forth. And as I said, you do a couple of quests, but they're kind of completely unfailable. And that's fine in theory. Of course it is. It's a walkie-talkie choice you make a game. You're not meant to fail, but there's not even any real, like, they don't even have any real implications on the end story either, I don't think. Like, these, your choices in these conversations don't massively change what happens at the end of the game. So, yeah, it's disappointing. It's a missed opportunity.
It is a shame. There's some fun set pieces. There's bits where you take part in a trial, which is fun. Yeah, it's fun. Really well written. There's a dance-off, because of course there is. And it's fun because the character who's doing it, you don't expect it. And it plays into character roles so cleverly. I think the other big issue is, and it's a bizarre one, is this game has terrible performance. Like, the frame rate in it stutters and chugs down to a crawl at certain moments.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre, because it's just a 2D side-scroller, and I don't quite understand how it's this bad.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, we spoke last week about Man of Medan, the talkie walkie choice game from Supermassive, and obviously with that game you played it at launch and I played it just now, and it seems like they've went back in and really fixed that stuff up to the point where I was actually praising how well it runs and how cinematic it was. Whereas After Party, again, you played it near launch, I'm playing it now about half a year later, and these performance issues are still there. They've not been fixed. They've not improved them. You know, you get massive, like, frame rate issues in certain areas. There's a kind of traveling, it's not a loading screen because there's still dialogue, but you travel from place to place in this taxi, and that just stutters like crazy. It's really
just
irritating. Yeah. At this point you'd have to say they're probably not fixing those. So, you know, it's probably, I don't know, either it's not something they want to commit time to, or it's maybe the issues are too kind of deeply ingrained in how they made the game. But as you said, this is kind of just a 2D-ish elements of 3D art thing. Like, it's nowhere near the sort of thing that should be struggling to run on any of these consoles. So it's a shame.
Yeah, it's just a bit of an odd one, isn't it? So, you know, I gave After Party a 6 overall. I don't think it's probably could be graded lower, but I like the world and the idea and a lot about this enough to carry me through. I gave Oxenfree a 7 for reference.
Yeah.
And I still find myself excited to see what the studio does next, because I do think they've got real potential to pull all of these elements together into something really good.
Yeah.
They've got a really good mastery of tone and idea and character. I think they could make something brilliant, but it wasn't this game, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, I mean, I gave After Party a 5 in the end. But yeah, I have the same battle as you. Like, I love this setting. So, like, if this setting was paired with a game that had the craft of Oxenfree, we'd probably be talking about an 8 or 9 out of 10 game. But sadly, the game just didn't hold up its end of the bargain with this one. So yeah, 5 for After Party, 7 for Oxenfree. Still a really good studio. A studio I'm really looking forward to seeing more games from. But After Party was maybe a slight misstep.
So we've got to wrap us up some pretty big news. We finally had it announced that the Xbox Series X will be launching in November, and a convincing leak for the Series S controller, so another potential announcement there, indicates that it's going to launch on the 6th of November, giving us about 10 weeks until these consoles are on the market. Is this exciting news for you? Is this kind of what we already knew?
I mean, we already knew, right? Like, this November, because you got to the point where, and I know we've went on about the price a million times, but you get to the point where they can't do October now. Like, even by their standards, that doesn't leave enough window for people to pre-order these machines. So I knew it would be November. I mean, if the leak is true, and the leak definitely looks true. For reference here, the leak here is that basically someone got their hands on a verified Xbox Series X controller, and the packaging on it has that it's for Xbox Series X and Series S. So that basically confirms that the Series S will probably also be out in November. And then the packaging had on it a thing saying that it's not to be opened before November 5th. I think it was on November 6th. And also November 6th. Somebody then registered that controller on the Microsoft website. And you get a one-year warranty on these things. And the warranty is listed as running out on November 6th, 2021. So
yeah.
Everything ties up to be a November 6th launch here, definitely. So, you know, that's cool. I'm glad it's early November. That's good. But let's be honest, what's happened here, and this is going to roll us directly into our next story here, but basically Microsoft had to delay Halo Infinite because it's just not ready. And they clearly sat there and brainstormed, like, what's the absolute minimum amount of positive information we can give out so that we have something nice to say on this day where we're going to tell people that the flagship launch title is not going to be out. And this was what they picked. They picked to say a launch month for a console that can now only come out in realistically two or three different months. Like, you know, yeah. It's an absolute minimal amount of information. Again, there's no price. They didn't even give the date of November 6th. They just said November. Like, that's all this is. They've literally just thought, all of the news today can't be Halo's delayed, everything's screwed. So we need to just give them something. And they chose this. And it's frankly not enough information to, you know, the Halo story was the big story still. This barely made, you know, any waves compared to that.
And it's baffling as well that the Series S, which everybody knows about at this point, has still not been officially announced by Microsoft to tell us what it actually is.
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously share frustrations with the very poor marketing job which both Sony and Microsoft have done for this next console generation. But for the love of God, this is a console which is potentially out in 10 weeks and we don't even know it exists.
Yeah. Like, you know, the thing with this is, like, obviously we always see this stuff from the perspective of people who, you know, games are like our primary hobby. You know, we're checking games journalists' sort of websites and stuff. We're getting all that information. And, you know, people who listen to this show are probably doing that as well. Whereas the people you got to think about here are the standard consumers, you know, the type of people who they find out about these consoles when they're actually revealed. And, you know, they make the decision to buy them then. Maybe they're buying them for their children or something. Like, you know, the Xbox Series S is probably going to be a really good option for people who, you know, want to save, let's say, £100, maybe a bit more, but still get a new machine. So that's the kind of thing that parents are going to be wanting to see, and they don't even know it exists. Like, what's that? Like, it completely boggles my mind. I can barely talk about it. I don't understand.
It's just bizarre, isn't it, at this point? Because I don't know why it's become such a weird big secret. Why?
Yeah, when everyone knows.
Are they ashamed of it? Is it like some form of ugly stepchild that they just don't want to show to the world? Like, come on now, you've got to tell people. It's going to launch the same sodding day. What's going on here? Like, this is weird.
It's absolutely insane. I mean, you know, this all kind of fits into an overarching theme here, which I want us to address, which is... I mean, obviously, we'll talk a bit more about the Halo delay, sure, but it is what it is. But the key question here is this the worst console launch you've ever seen? Like, out of all of the console launches?
Oh, I think it's comfortably. I mean, even the Wii U with its muddled messaging, at least it had a years of build and we knew what was happening and we knew we had a launch lineup. I mean,
exactly.
The launch lineup for these means everybody keeps saying there's going to be like 50 games available. Most of these games are just Xbox One games, which will eventually get an Xbox Series X optimization. A lot of them might even optimize at launch.
Yeah, exactly. It's insane. I mean,
it's just ridiculous. There's barely anything that's really worth playing on day one. Yeah. I mean, we're going to end up buying these things, but God knows why.
I'm in exactly that point now. Like, I'm desperate to be excited for new consoles because I love new consoles. I love new stuff in this industry. It makes me really excited. And these two companies, because this is about the PlayStation as well. Don't get me wrong. This is not just about the Series X.
Oh, it's both.
They're both doing the best job they can to make people not need these consoles. It's insane. I mean, you look at it, you know, we've got 10 weeks about now to go until these things come out. And across the two different consoles, there's technically four different consoles because you've obviously got a PS5 digital or not digital or whatever. And then you've got the Xbox Series X and Series S. No prices yet for any of those, which we've talked about ad nauseum, I know, but still, no prices.
No announcement for one of them.
Well, yeah, one of them doesn't even officially exist yet. And then you go to like the exclusive games. And the most I've been able to dig up for this is that the Series X has The Medium by Bloober Team, which looks like a really cool little horror game. You know, and it looks like it's using the Series X's power well to kind of render these two identical versions of, well, to these two different versions of the same world locations at the same time. It looks cool, but nonetheless, it's not a big title. Obviously, they've also lost Halo Infinite, which was going to be on the Xbox One, but I think people will have been willing to pay up to have the best version of that game. And now that's not even out this year. And then you switch over to the Sony side, and Sony have Spider-Man Miles Morales, which... they've already said this is a spin-off Spider-Man title. This isn't it's not Spider-Man 2. It's a more contained, smaller game. Yeah. And also, let's be honest now, that's only a PS5 exclusive, so they can say it's a PS5 exclusive. It's a PS4 game in a PS4 engine. They almost certainly probably have a running version of it on PS4, but you know, that doesn't help them right now. So they're not going to, you know, it might even come out on PS4 at some point, to be honest. I could see if that was a benefit to them, I could see them just quietly throwing it out. But, you know, here we are. It's a PS4 game that is only going to be on the PS5, so they can tell you they've got an exclusive. And then there's Deathloop, which is a timed exclusive from Arkane Studios. So that's only going to be on PS5 this year, and then it'll come to Series X next year. And that's it. That's all you've got. Like, I mean, what the hell? How is that it? It's insane. Like you said, the Wii U was a horrendous launch, but the Wii U still had like Nintendo Land, which was surprisingly very fun. It had a Super Mario Brothers like 2D platformer, and then it had the god awful Zombie U, which was like a zombie kind of game. And that's at least three exclusive launch titles. And I'm sure there was probably more that I'm not even thinking of, but there's three finger, like air quotes, big titles. And we only have three titles in total across a Microsoft and a Sony machine.
It's just, by this point, you should basically know what the launch lineup is. You should essentially know, because it's out in 2 months. And everybody, nobody's announcing a surprise game for release at Christmas now. You might get Call of Duty's not announced its next title yet. That'll turn up. But
they've announced it on a pack of Doritos by mistake.
Well, yeah, you know. And maybe that Rocksteady Suicide Squad game is ridiculously further along than we think it is, but it's almost certainly not. But, you know, I just find it mind-boggling that they've not been able to nail down, well, these are the reasons you should own this console. So Microsoft has obviously gone down the path of everything you can play on Series X is playable on Xbox One, and I get that, and it's very consumer-friendly, and well done to them
that. Yeah, it's great in the long run, but you've got to have a short game, right? You've got to have something as well.
You've got to give me a reason to buy it now, otherwise why don't I just stick on my Xbox One?
Yeah, exactly. It's insane. Like, let's be honest, right? So obviously we, you know, we're running Beat the Sheep. We've got a show to run. We're playing all the new Game Pass games and stuff. Like, if I bought a Series X at launch and you stayed on your Xbox One S that you've got now, like, when would be the first time that you would need to buy the new console to contribute to the show? Like,
yeah,
it'd be holiday 2021, to be honest. Yeah. I think you would be able to play every single game I can play for at least the first year, which, again, it's super pro-consumer, it's great. And in a way, it would have worked a little better if Halo Infinite was coming out, because at least that's a game where you can say, you know, this is this big budget kind of first party game, and you know, I'm sure they really could have sold it on, I mean, I know they didn't do a great job yet, but they could have, you know, sold it as this is the thing where you want to play it in the best possible version. Like, with that gone, like, why am I getting a Series X? Am I getting it so that I can play Tetris Effect in 4K instead of 1080p? Like, I don't see, I mean, I'm gonna buy it on launch because I'm a crazy person, but there's literally no reason to. I have no reason to tell anyone to buy this now.
I mean, how big of a blow is Halo Infinite being delayed to 2021 for Microsoft here? It's nearly death knell territory.
Oh, it's fatal.
Really.
It's a fatal blow.
Oh, it's horrible.
It looks dreadful for them. And they can lean on Game Pass all they want, but it's not. They can lean on Game Pass now. Nothing changes. It's the same situation. So they just lose out so hard from not having Halo. It makes them look really bad. And I, at the same time, I actually kind of applaud them for the move, because At the end of the day, like, that game obviously isn't ready. And it's not, this isn't about the way that one stupid picture of that grunt man looked on the video. Halo by and large, it played well. It looked good in motion. And, you know, sure, it could look better graphically, but this will be something deeper than that. There'll be big elements of this game that they won't have ready at launch. They'd already said beforehand that ray tracing, which is one of those new buzzwords that, you know, everyone's excited about in the new consoles, is like, it's basically just a way to make lighting look super realistic, and it looks really cool. I've seen it on PC, it's great, but they were saying that that's going to be in a post-launch patch, and that's really the thing that's going to, like, that'll make Halo look so much better on the Series X than it can on the older consoles. So I think that they've thought, like, if those things that are going to really highlight the Series X version aren't even in the game at launch, this is going to come out at launch and people will be like, the Series X isn't doing anything special there. Why do I need it? So I support the decision. I think it's a really difficult decision, and I understand that they've made it for kind of, they're playing the super long game here, but the problem is Microsoft have been stuck playing the long game for about 5 years. You know, they had to recover after the One launch, and they've done a good job of recovering, but this is just a huge blow again. So I don't know. It's difficult to see a good way for them to come back from this one, at least in the next year or so.
It's a really interesting scenario, isn't it? Because obviously there was mass criticism of the Halo Infinite footage and how it looked, and rightly so, it didn't look great. But I think the bigger problem is there's been rumours swirling for years that 343 is a studio in a lot of trouble. Lead designers on this game left, all over the shop. Every creative lead's left, all halfway through development, three quarters of the way through development. It's had a very troubled development as Halo Infinite. Yeah. And I think even the staunchest Halo fan would say that the series hasn't really hit any heights since Bungie left. And it's looking like 343 is a studio which is really struggling to live up to what is a very big name franchise with departures left, right, and centre. Phil Spencer will not have wanted to delay this game.
No, God, no. It's a very difficult decision to make, but yeah.
You know, but, and that to me indicates that I don't even think we might be seeing this early 2021. This could get pushed back to summer, September.
If not a holiday release, to be honest, at this point.
The fact that they just said 2021, they didn't give a date. I'd be worried that this game won't be turned up for a while now. Yeah. That it may go into a bit of a cooking pot just to see what they can pull out. But it's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame because, like I said, I genuinely do think that, and I think a lot of people agreed that from a pure gameplay standpoint, it looked solid. It looked pretty sharp. I was excited about it when I watched it. And I know other people that were. So, you know, I think they've got a good game there, and I do support the decision to just, you know, I mean, look, making everyone work from home, or, you know, needing to work from home this year because of the COVID situation, like, it's been very difficult on a lot of studios, and some have dealt with it better than others because it's a totally different dynamic. I mean, you know, I've worked as a developer for about a decade now, and there's a very different dynamic to being in an office with your colleagues and suddenly being at home and just needing to, like, video call and stuff. And it's, some people aren't ready to make that change, and they're not the type of developer that works well in that condition. And for 343 to suddenly have to adapt to that, it's very tough. I mean, we've seen that with Nintendo. Like, Nintendo's release cadence has fell off a cliff since COVID. and they've came out and said it. They said, like, the realities of this situation are very difficult for Nintendo because they're like hyper secure with their, they don't like letting stuff out of the office, basically, which is why you get very few Nintendo leaks. I know we've had a couple this year, but you know, you don't often hear about Nintendo stuff before it comes out. You know, you're not seeing someone sat on a plane with the new Assassin's Creed on his laptop. Like, it's not the way they do things. So to have to work from home has affected them badly, and it will affect other studios badly, like it probably has with 343. So it's an understandable delay, and I just hope we get a good game at the end of it. I don't mind if it's next year now, because the damage is done from the delay anyway. I don't mind if it's late next year, I should say. But the key here is just to make sure they get this project under control, because I think what they're trying to do here is make sure they don't damage Halo in a severe way. Because Halo 4 and 5, which 343 made, the multiplayer in them both is still kind of revered and seen as fantastic, but it's the single player stuff that's fell short, and that's what a lot of the fans of Halo want. And that's what they're trying to invoke with this game. Like, the trailer and the gameplay footage was full of original Halo kind of callbacks and references. They want to pull people back in for this epic single player campaign. So yeah, they have to get it right. And if the delay is how they do that, then great.
I always support any delays to any games, which means that the devs don't have to crunch through and work ridiculous hours to get something out the door. When it's ready, it's ready. It's the right way to do it. But it's undeniably going to be a bit of a hammer blow to the launch of the console at Christmas.
Yeah, but definitely.
Hopefully there'll be titles which step up to take a bit of spotlight. You know, you never know. Maybe the medium will be an absolute system seller. Hopefully it is.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, it would be nice if it was, because they need something. All right, then. And with that is the end of the news segment and the end of the show. So, yeah, until next time, if you want to catch us on social media, we'll probably be posting about the upcoming Leaving Soon titles there first, so you can get a head start on those. Just find us at Beat the Sheet on Twitter or Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email about maybe a question or some feedback on the show, you can find us at beatthesheetpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Andy Wood, and I've now beaten 56% of the sheet. I've managed to claw back 1% of progress there.
And I'm Josh Stimson, and I've beaten 48% of the sheets. 47, but I've rounded it up. It's above 48.
There's no rounding. If I rounded, I'd be on 57.
Well, you should have rounded it up. You had your choice. I made it.
Oh, well, at least you're getting closer to the big 5-0 there. So
big 5-0.
All right, guys. We'll catch you all next week. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.